San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick recently stepped into an interesting role by refusing to stand for the national anthem in protest of what he believes are wrongdoings against people of color in the U.S. Whether you agree or disagree with his method, his actions have sparked an interesting moment to look at what constitutes activism and at what sort of actions actually matter. At a time when, indeed, social media can both ignite and deflate entire social movements, it's easy to feel a grand sense of purpose when we hit like. But what does that simple click really do? Further, let's face it, the skill of discussion, of respectful debate, and of thoughtful dialogue is, well, it's pretty much toast at this point. Case in point, look at the healthy and productive conversations we are simply not having as issues are raised during this election year. So when it comes to activism, to making meaningful change on the issues that matter to us down to our hearts and bones, is social media to blame for our false sense of impact, for thinking that a simple share, tweet, or like could actually matter? Or does online activism matter more than we think? And while we're asking questions here, are we unfairly blaming social media for apathetic involvement and overlooking critique of the type of in-person activism that smacks of all talk, no action-itis? Maybe. Is the idea of slacktivism, that is, the act of committing a small gesture of activism with minimal impact attached to it, but feeling smugly accomplished about making a difference, is that epidemic more serious than perhaps we realize? And are we wrong to criticize individuals making bold moves to stand up for what they believe in when the stakes are high? Isn't that, after all, how change comes about? Tonight, that's what we'll aim to discuss. Activism. The idea of slacktivism and the tendency to think we've done something meaningful when really we just, say, changed our Facebook profile photo. We'll talk about community organizing, tips for citizens to make real change through moves both bold and small, activism in an election year, and a bigger picture look at what matters. I'm Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special on WGN. Tonight's episode, Activism for Real.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN, you heard the lady. This is the Saturday Night Special, and I'm Amy Guth. Tonight's show, it is all about activism, the very positive things that we can each do to foster more productive dialogue and to create real change, and the role, perhaps, that social media could play in activism. For better or worse, right? Community organizing, we're going to talk about that, and tips for average citizens to make real change. Activism in an election year, we'll definitely talk about that, and we're going to look at why all of this even matters at all. We're going to have some really great guests tonight, too, that will be joining us throughout the program to offer their insights. Community organizers and activists, founders of Millennials of New York, My Block, My Hood, My City, Hope for the Day, and Organized Communities Against Deportations, and psychologist Dr. Lisa Kaplan will be joining us throughout the program. So, esteemed producer Rachel Woodall will be the voice at the other end of the line when you call tonight, 312-981-7200. You can, of course, call or text that number to share your comments throughout the show. But you can also find me Twitter, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, all those good places to contribute to the conversation by social media tonight throughout the program and all week long. We'll be right back in just a bit to get the conversation underway on 720 WGN. Got up in my tea. 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us this evening. I'm grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday evening with us. I know you have many, many choices of things you could be doing, so I'm very appreciative. Tonight, we're talking all about activism and kind of that armchair activism in particular, where we think we're doing good by clicking a post or hitting like or liking a Facebook page or retweeting somebody or signing a petition, but is that enough? So we have a lot of guests that we're going to be speaking with throughout the evening who have a great deal of expertise in that area. And we're starting this wonderful group of guests off with our good friend, Emmanuel Garcia, who has been on this program before. Welcome back to the show, Emmanuel.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me back.
Hi. Thanks for coming back. I appreciate you taking time out of your Saturday evening. I think everybody knows you, but just in case they do not, you work in communications and development at crossroads.org, and you are an inductee in the Chicago LGBT Hall of Fame. You have done so much. I think you've spent your entire life, before you were even an adult, you were doing community organizing. So you have a lot of perspective on this, and you've really done so much for so many important causes, in particular in the Pilsen area. And so thank you for joining us tonight. But I wonder, when you think about activism and the work that you do in particular, how would you describe your particular, flavor or approach to activism?
Well, I think, as you mentioned, Amy, and thank you for that introduction, I have been doing community organizing, community building for at least 15 years. And in that time frame, I think we had, the internet. And so I would be one of those maybe folks who are using new tools for organizing, like the internet, social media, to kind of use those tools to do that type of work. And so for me, it's as a communications person, it's always important to try to figure out how do we use these platforms to marriage them with like traditional organizing, techniques, strategies. So I always try to incorporate all of those things together to reach different people or new people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so given that you have had, so much success using social media for activism and community organizing that you're doing, do you feel like there is a downside to social media? I mean, I think the worry is that we're kind of losing a little bit of touch with what impact really is and how to actually do impactful work. For the average citizen, is it to their detriment to be doing or to be fulfilling the need for activism through social media?
I think, we're getting to a point, hopefully, in the next couple of years where we will start to look at social media more as the way that we just communicate. So it's the way that we are communicating today versus the way we were communicating 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so it's completely changed the way that we get our news, the way that we tell our friends, what's new in our lives, the way we interact with each other. And obviously that presents its like the ugly forms, the passive aggressiveness, mm-hmm. or the I'm going to the 50 events on that one day, but that's completely impossible.
Right.
And so nobody shows up. And so I think that it's just a way of getting more creative using those tools. But it's also, they're just really important. And I think that when you look at how important Facebook is, for example, or Twitter have been in doing organizing work and really educating people on issues, there's just nothing like it. It's instant. If you tell people right now that there's a situation happening, the number of people that see that versus the number of people that wouldn't see it if you didn't share it through that platform, you just can't compare.
Right. I think I had the biggest revelation about, the positive areas, the positive impact of social media on activism during the NATO summit here in Chicago, because, mm-hmm. Here we had so many different groups all leading demonstrations, and you were able to look at hashtags and tell who was where and when, and you you could look, you know, so many people were using Ustream and broadcasting the march, so you could tell exactly where people were. And I thought that was really interesting. I think a lot of journalists had that same revelation at that around that time. You know, so I wonder too, though, in that area of activism that relates to social media, while I, you know, I'm very pro technology and I think it's really important to work in that area, I wonder sometimes about the echo chamber. You know, our feeds are so curated, our friends are selected, and is it as, you know, is it, are there particular challenges that come with that, just because we tend to isolate ourselves and around conversation that already kind of agrees with us, you know what I mean?
No, absolutely. I think that is where some of that there, you know, aside from the issues that people are currently working on, right? I think that, like you said, technology is going to be one of these issues that we're going to have to organize around to make more accessible. What you're mentioning is kind of the algorithm that gets created, that, you know, you only see specific things that, you know, that algorithm thinks that you want to see. So you're really not getting the full picture of things. There's specific things that get, you know, promoted to you because of your politics, because of the things that you say you like on, you know, when you're searching on Google and things that you search for and all of that. So absolutely, I think there is a chamber that gets created. And there is that old reference, right? Like preaching to the choir. So yeah. How effective are you being if you are only sharing pro stories about an issue that you care about to your friends who also think like you?
Right.
And so there has to be that there's a specific place that you can use that platform to make sure that you're not only just sharing that story, but that you're mobilizing people around that issue that they also care about. I think with politics, it's really interesting because, you know, you could either have family members who are more conservative or, you know, friends and family that are more liberal. And so those, I think, come around election time, I think, is when you see the most friction, because people really take on these candidates as their, like, you know, one thing that they do every 4 years, and that they strongly believe that these people are going to affect, that they're the ones that are going to make the changes happen, when in reality, we all have the power to make some type of change, not just like as individuals, but like local politics or local issues that are happening in our cities, and like in Chicago in particular. So I think that it's just really about, I wish that people would realize sometimes that, yeah, they only are talking to people that are like them, but how can you be more effective with what you share with those people and how you mobilize them?
Right. I think, too, to kind of switch up a little bit, but still related to this, I'm endlessly fascinated by watching boycotts and petitions bubble up online. I think that is very interesting because sometimes I think people have forgotten the purpose of a boycott. It's not really just to necessarily walk away. It's really to affect change. And sometimes people are like, never again, I'm never going to this place again because this happened, as opposed to, hey, this happened, let's, you know, withhold our dollars until this business has changed their ways or something. You know what I mean? It seems like there's this tendency to just walk away and be done instead of working for change. And I wonder if you see that too, since you're working so deeply in, you know, working for change.
Yeah. I mean, it's like you right now, like in California, there's the Driscoll grapes that are being boycotted, that people are asking people to boycott the Driscoll company because they are not paying their workers a fair wage. And that has created a lot of debates among people, whether it, you know, it's important to go to a store and, you know, say you don't want to buy these grapes, or do you push that? How do you push that company to actually, you know, pay fair wages to their employees? I think in places like North Carolina, when they had like anti-transgender legislation that passed around bathrooms, and the way that, you know, certain trans individuals were not being allowed to use the bathrooms that they want to use, mm-hmm. and that people, the LGBT community, LGBT organizations, national organizations started calling on, you know, big companies that were there, big conferences that were being held there, and saying, pull out. Like, you're, yeah. you can't, we don't want you to support North Carolina. And it became such a big deal that they, you know, they felt that pressure. They started to feel that economic pressure of the, this like ruling that they had made. And so there sometimes it, but that all takes like these meetings that happen, not, you know, just like you said, online, but yeah. there were these offline meetings, organizing that was happening. But also the importance of educating people around this issue was happening mostly online. Most people who are not in North Carolina or had any idea what was happening were primarily getting their news from the internet and from social media, and we're getting updates from people about what exactly was happening. And when a new company would pull their dollars, then everyone would, you know, reshare that story and feel like they were contributing and they were supporting. And obviously these organizations were, you know, smart. And so they started saying, donate to us. We're doing the work on mm-hmm. the ground. Give us the money. Keep resharing the story. But, you know, we need to fund this movement in some way.
Right, right. Well, you know, you have been, Emmanuel Garcia, you have been a longtime community organizer and have done so much work, and particularly around some very contentious and sometimes, I think, confusing topics for people outside of them, you know, I think especially initially, and have started a lot of conversations that have been really important. And so what do you wish the average citizen understood about activism that you see from the inside that would, seems like such a slam dunk that maybe you don't see the average citizen doing to be an ally to groups and to be a very conscious activist partner?
I think sometimes people miss the bigger story of how all of these issues are connected. You know, there's a lot of intersectionality within all of these issues, all of like what is Black Lives Matter, what is LGBT issues, whether it's the bathrooms, whether it's the grapes. I think that unless it's something that affects you, people don't begin to realize the importance of, you know, using these tools. So, you know, we have, there's just so many. You have like the stuff that was happening around Planned Parenthood mm-hmm. when these like awful videos were coming out, and people, you know, people started to like use hashtags to talk about that issue. And that was like primarily seen as like a woman's issue or a feminist issue. And so all of these issues are really connected. And my hope is that people, you know, would empathize and would maybe pause and start to think about how these issues affect everybody. I think in particular, like the Black Lives Matter stuff has been very, the Black Lives Matter, immigration, these seem to be like wedge issues, I think primarily because there's race mm-hmm. Attached to them, and we're just not comfortable in this country talking about race at all, and we don't talk about it as much as we should, and with an open heart as much as we should. And I think that type of listening needs to happen on both sides, because, you know, I feel like sometimes we jump to maybe demonize and criticize people instead of listening and educating. And so I do think that it's really important to kind of have that balance on both ends.
Yeah, truly. I hope that you consider a political career at some point, because I wish more politicians approached with the way that you are approaching the work that you do. Emmanuel Garcia, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Everybody, go find this guy on Twitter. There's so much wonderful stuff that you're sharing every day on social media. I love it all. It's always such a very positive message for all the work that you're doing in very, very big and impactful issues. And of course, as an inductee into the Chicago LGBT Hall of Fame. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you to news and all that good stuff. And we will be back to continue this conversation all about activism, armchair activism, and what we can really do to make meaningful change. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
In 1872, Susan B. Anthony cast her ballot in the national election. In 1955, Rosa Parks refused to give up her seat to a white man. And in 2015, I put a filter on my profile picture.
720 WGN. That was an excerpt from an interesting video made by Millennials of New York all about slacktivism, how sometimes we just change our Facebook profile photo and think, I've done something, or I've spoken out, or I've hit like, or I've shared this article. But we're talking a lot tonight about activism, armchair activism, or slacktivism, if you will, and what it really means to do meaningful gestures for positive change on the issues that are really important to us. So we were just talking with Emmanuel Garcia, who is a community organizer and member of the Chicago LGBT Hall of Fame here, and has worked and done so many of these things, and worked both in social media and offline person-to-person activism. And I think that's very, very important. But I think, too, there's a very powerful role for satire. So joining us now from Millennials of New York, Connor Toole, co-founder. Hi, Connor. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Amy. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us tonight. I know there's many, many things to do on a Saturday evening in New York City, so I appreciate you being with us here in Chicago. So tell us a little bit about Millennials of New York and how that project got started.
Yep. So Millennials of New York started about a year ago. It is a parody of Humans of New York, which is the infinitely popular Facebook page that everyone's parents probably share on too much on Facebook. But we started, it was a project for Elite Daily, the website that I worked for with Alec McDonald, who helps run the page. And we just saw the opportunity to make fun of millennial culture. We are millennials. There's just so many ridiculous aspects of it. And we both really enjoyed satire as well, so we just saw it as the perfect outlet to sort of poke fun and maybe raise some questions and concerns about our generation. And the video about slacktivism was, I think, one of our favorites that we put out so far.
It is mighty funny. So everybody head online and go find this video. Just Google Millennials of New York and slacktivism video. You will find it. It's very, very funny. But you know, I think what's the thing about comedy is that things are funny because there's a grain of truth in them. And watching it, you go, oh, I know that person. Oh, I know that person. Oh, I know a person that does this. Or ourselves, right? We've all kind of been guilty of probably not doing enough sometimes. So you know, what is the reaction that you got from that video? Were people kind of like, oh, mea culpa, okay, I do that, fair enough, guilty as charged? Or were people defensive about it, or both?
It's a little of both. I mean, all of our videos and our posts, they come from a place of love. Just, we're not really trying to criticize anyone too hard for doing anything. It's more just pointing out things that we notice and maybe make people think twice about them. And basically all the posts that we make are inspired a lot by our own lives personally. So we're making fun of ourselves the entire time. I know we're guilty of this. I know I'm guilty of it. I do things online where I just want to make some sort of impact. But I think most people, they saw it, they realized the truth in it, and that they are on Facebook and they are sharing articles and they're getting in fights in the comment sections and they're throwing their filters on their Facebook profiles. And it has an effect. And I think it is tangible in some cases, but at the same time, I think there is a fair amount of self-aggrandizing going on where people think they're doing a bit more than they really are. And for us, we just kind of wanted to point that out.
Yeah.
And we have, working on the internet, you just see examples of it every single day. And so we had the chance to point it out. And I think people were receptive to it.
Yeah, yeah. You know, one part of that video I really, really like was where it says, you know, something about letting people know that my heart goes out to them in times of tragedy. And I think that one really struck me because that's the one I feel like every time I see it, I just, you know, their heart's in the right place, but it's like, but so do something. You know,
it is, right. And that's the thing is for us, I mean, part of me, I feel bad because honestly, if you know what, if you do say, again, I keep going back to the profile pictures, but if that show of solidarity, if that show of unity is actually going to help one person going through a tough time feel a little better about it, then great. We're not here to say don't do this. We're just saying maybe think about why you're doing it, think about how much you do it, and think about the motivations behind it and the effect that it's actually going to have. And you can make a change. You can start a dialogue. And the internet, we've seen in the past years how powerful it can be to make social change and get conversations started. But we just want to see it used in the right way.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Amen. I think especially in an election year, as we think about that, you know, we get stuck in the echo chambers. I also think there's a really interesting phenomenon of, I mean, I I lament the fall of the art of discussion and debate. I think that's missing, and everything has to be very polarizing now for reasons I don't totally know, but reasons we could spend the rest of the show trying to unpack, certainly. And, you know, it seems like there is a tendency that is especially on display now in an election year where critical thinking is, in fact, seen like a betrayal. And by that, I mean, if someone is in favor of candidate A, it's like you have to be all in on that candidate. And if you say one thing critical about them, somehow you've betrayed the party and supporters.
I agree. I think it's very clear with both parties, especially in the primaries this year. Just people, I think, over the past decade or so, especially, just the space between the aisles seemed to have grown wider and wider. And the partisanship is definitely at an extreme. I'm not sure exactly how much further it can get. And that's why I think we want just to make people think, and that's our big motivation, is that it is the critical thinking, that there is kind of a loss. It's very reactionary, and that's the problem with the internet, is you get these tidbits of news. You might not get the entire story, and maybe 2 days later you'll find out all the facts, but you've already shared those posts. You've already fought with people that you went to high school with for too long and then lost friends in the process. And it is. It's like the lack of critical thinking, and I think that's the problem with online is not probably the best for discourse. It's the anonymity. It's the ability to really just type whatever's on your mind, hit enter, and all of a sudden it's there for the world to see. And it's different being face-to-face with people. You're not going to get, in most cases, the animosity you would experience online if you're in a room with these same people having the same discussion.
Right. Truly. Truly. It'll be interesting to see, I think, after November, if people kind of bring it down a notch. I love to imagine this beautiful, you know, idyllic state returns in which we can all have thoughtful dialogue. I think it might take a few years.
And I mean, we've seen it firsthand. Is we had a post that we had to take down because people were threatening the person in the picture because they couldn't understand that the quote was fake. And we made a comment, and that was the first time we ever broke sort of our facade and said, a reminder, everything on this page is satire. And this person still got threats from people because they disagreed with the message and the point that the political point that we were harping on. And it is just seeing it firsthand and being in charge of a Facebook page where you see people in these comments just going at it with each other. It's amusing sometimes, but it's also...
So before you run, though, I want you to tell us about your book, because I know that is coming out right around the corner in October.
Yeah, so thankfully, Simon Schuster and Gallery Books were lucky enough to let us write a book for them. And so we're coming out October 4th. We put it together. It's about 100 never before seen pictures and captions, along with some of the favorites that we've already published. We just got the first copies back, and it looks fantastic, and we're really excited for it to come out. So we hope that people enjoy it as much as they enjoyed the posts and the videos we've made so far.
Excellent. Well, I wish you nothing but success with the book and the continued work that you're doing with Millennials of New York. Connor Toole, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Amy. Have a good one.
All right, you too. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, chase that commercial play and ghost out of the studio, and we'll be right back in just a bit to continue this conversation all about activism, armchair activism, and how to make real impactful change in the world about the topics that we feel deeply. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight we're talking all about activism, armchair activism, and how we can all work for positive change in ways that really matter, not just hitting like on Facebook or changing our profile photos, things like that. So we have a wonderful group of activists and founders and really brilliant people that are joining us tonight. And my next guest is no exception to that. Please welcome to the program Jamal Cole, who is founder of My Block, My Hood, My City, an organization helping under-resourced teens in Chicago. Welcome to the program, Jamal.
Thanks for having me, Amy. How are you doing tonight?
Great. Thanks for joining us. I know there are many, many options of things to do on a Saturday evening, so I appreciate you joining us to talk about your organization. So let's start there. Tell us a bit, if you would, about My Block, My Hood, My City.
Yeah, so when I graduated from college in 2005, I started volunteering at Cook County Jail. I thought I was going to be, you know, a speaker. When you are young, you want to be an activist. The first thing you think about is giving great presentations. Mm-hmm. So I went to Cook County Jail. I figured that's a tough audience, but nobody wanted to hear me speak. So I spent about 3 years listening to the kids in jail talk about their blocks and their neighborhoods. And it dawned on me after a few years that not a lot of them had ever been downtown or even seen the lake. You know, their whole worldview was shaped by a few blocks, and I wanted to do something about that. So I started a program where I introduced teens to different cultures, different professions, and different cuisines outside of their neighborhood.
That's so wonderful, the work that you're doing. Really, really very important work. And so what would you say the challenge is around the particular type of activism you're doing working with young people?
Yeah, so I would just say, are you a cool person to be around? Like, can they relate to you? You know, you don't want to, you do a lot more listening than preaching. So can you listen to them? Can you read their poems? Can you listen to them rap? Can you not hold your nose up at them if they sag their jeans? Can you think, put yourself back in the position when you were 15 and 16 years old? I think it's definitely a challenge, but I think if you cannot do that, then it's hard to come up with any solutions.
Certainly. So as we've been talking about activism tonight, you know, we're throwing around a lot of words, and I mm-hmm. think it's important to define some of them, right? We've been saying community activism. We've been saying mm-hmm. community organizing, and even the word mobilizing has come up. And I think sometimes mm-hmm. those all get kind of blurred together as one thing, to the extent mm-hmm. that they kind of lose momentum, a little, lose meaning, and people I think they can kind of exist on a continuum, right? That could range from anything from hitting like on Facebook to you know, testifying before Congress. So in your mind, how do you break out those and define all of those different terms?
Yeah, so I started giving presentations in Chatham on the south side of Chicago when I was 23. And that's just figuring out what's going on in the community and finding solutions. So it could be the red line being extended, or it could be potholes in the ground. It could be a methadone clinic, figuring out what the issues are and then advocating for positive change. I think that a lot of people, I've been doing this for 10 years, just that, before I even started my nonprofit. But there's a difference between mobilizing and organizing. So mobilizing is going into the community with your own agenda. Like, hey, I want to get people together to talk about an issue that I'm passionate about. And that you're just going to parachute into a community with your own agenda, your own flyers. Organizing is actually going into a community, figuring out what the assets are. Who are the faith-based organizations? What are the local hidden gem businesses? What are the community roots? What are the nonprofit leaders there? And then organizing around the issues that they already care about. And that's that takes a little bit more time, because you have to figure out what are the issues. Figure out how are you going to track the metrics of if it's working, how are you going to get it funded, and things like that. It's just there's a big difference between mobilizing and organizing. And, you know, I just think people need to know the difference between the two.
You know, I think that is such an important point that you bring up, because so often you hear stories of people who, with very good intentions, think they are helping someone in the way they want to be helped, but in fact mm-hmm. have almost hurt them. You know, there was a story mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I recall in Chicago maybe 4 or 5 years ago, in which somebody raised money for a particular homeless guy and gave him a large sum of money, and he refused it. And it was like, you don't understand. It's not that I need money. Like, I'll be in trouble. I'll be a target if I have all this money with me. I appreciate it, but that's not what I need. I need access. I need resources. I need a mailing address, a phone, you know, the ability to fill out a job application with an address on it. And it was, I think that's a really important distinction, because sometimes we think we know what someone needs, as opposed to listening to a community and mm-hmm. or working within our own community of saying, like, here's this thing right in front of me that I know I can fix. Mm-hmm.
That's right. I mean, you know, everybody has a role in fighting injustice in Chicago, and there's a multitude of protesters that have different agendas, and they all have different tactics on how they address their issues. The challenging thing that I've seen is just how they have different ideas on how to identify problems and then different solutions that they are going to propose. So I think that's always been the case with movements as large as the civil rights movement. You know, people disagree with that, to movements as small as bringing Whole Foods to Inglewood. You're going to have people disagree about, you know, how to mm-hmm. get things done. But I think the people that are protesters or mobilizers, they're good for Chicago in the long run, because they're keeping the issues in the light. It doesn't really matter if they don't have solutions yet. They're actually, you know, they're good because their specialty is making sure the causes don't get forgotten. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. So what's frustrating to you about the work that you're doing? What do you see that, you know, you feel like two steps forward, one step back? You know, what, like, where mm-hmm, do you mm-hmm. feel like change is not going fast enough? Or where do you feel like it's most urgent, or maybe where all the missteps are the most?
I would say, you know, a source of frustration can be the media, because, you know, if you, from their perspective, they instead of calling everybody civil rights leaders or activists, you know, they could call them social change agents or the people that are pushing for social change. I think, it's, almost a bastardization of that term, activists. Mm-hmm. But I also think that we need to, the foundations need to start thinking differently outside the box of reducing recidivism rates, violence prevention, economic development. We always talk about this is the things that we're looking to fund, but, you know, we need to be more innovative because clearly things are getting worse in Chicago. So I think that we need to start investing in people because people touch people more so than, you know, data tableaus downtown. You know, you need to really get out in the community and be a leader and be amongst the people in order to create change.
Yeah, truly. You know, I have a show coming up about restorative justice, and mm-hmm. some of those very topics are coming up there in that area too, which I think is really interesting. And I'm happy to see so many people in the legal profession and community organizers looking to that topic as a solution mm-hmm. instead of just, you know, keeping people in a system that is quite broken, truly.
Exactly.
So what tips would you have for, you know, the average citizen who means well and wants to be involved and do things the right way to get involved if they really just don't know where to start?
Yeah, I would go to www.mbmhmc.com, go to my website, and I would sign up to volunteer because, you know, whether we're going to be, you know, passing out hoodies to the homeless or feeding the homeless or painting a veteran's shelter or cleaning up parks in North Lawndale. You know, we actually are doing a lot of work throughout the city. If there's a park that's littered with drug needles in North Lawndale, you know, that matters to me, even though my park is Cole Park in Chatham, right? If there's housing issues going on 18th and Pilsen, that matters to me if, you know, I live in Uptown. If there's a homelessness issue in Uptown, that matters to me if I live in Inglewood. We really, you know, we spread all around Chicago because we really believe, you know, if a chain is only as strong as the weakest link, Chicago can only be as strong as its most under-resourced community. So I would go to our website, mbmhmc.com. And also, you know, I would also just email me if you want to know, if you live in a community and you want to know who the social change agents are there, I probably know them. Like, you know, and I would love to connect you with what they have going on, just like I'm sure they would love to connect you with the things we have going on.
Excellent. And how do you feel that the role of activism or the importance of activism, especially as you're talking with so many young people as you do in your work at My Block, My Hood, My City, how do you think the election year is playing, you know, especially to such young people who may not even be old enough to vote yet, but nonetheless feel passionate about that?
Yeah, I think a good question. I think this role of power, you know, access to power has been played since the classical ages, mm-hmm. really, when the Roman Empire ruled over Eastern Europe and Northern Africa. I think, I think they should be involved. And I think that the law should reflect the values we have as citizens. So if you feel a certain way about crime, or if you feel a certain way about gun laws, or you feel a certain way about whatever issue it is that bothers you, I think you have to let your voice be heard. Go vote. You know, if you don't vote, you know, don't complain. This is their opportunity. There's people that have died for us to have the liberties that we have today, and I think some people take those liberties for granted. So I think we need to let our voice be heard, and one of the ways we can do that is by voting in the elections.
Truly, truly. And not just the main presidential elections. I think it's so important for us to really get to know who are the people in a very person-to-person way, who are the people running our city and our particular neighborhoods. And I think that's so very important to get involved with.
Yeah, sure. I mean, exactly. Like, who's running the city? I mean, if people talked about who had the most power in the city, their eyes would probably glaze over because our city is, you know, a lot of these. The real power is with the groups that exist before and after each mayor. I mean, we have the Chicago Teachers Union, the Fraternal Order of Police. We have we just have a lot of power structures that have a lot of power. And the mayor and his appointees are temporary, but those groups that exist before and after each mayor have a lot to say with what's going on in our city.
That's very true. Very, very true. Excellent perspective on the city, and I appreciate you sharing your expertise and knowledge with us. Again, everybody, head to this website. I'm going to share it after the show, but it's mbmhmc, and it's .org, right?
Yeah, it's actually .com. mbmhmc.com.
Okay, yep. .com. Great. So I'll be sure and tweet that out after the show so everybody can get in touch and do all of that good stuff. Jamal Cole, founder of My Block, My Hood, My City, thank you so much for being with us this evening.
Thank you, Amy. Have a good day.
Thanks, you too. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break, and then we're going to get you to news and all that good stuff, and then we will continue this conversation with hour two of the Saturday Night Special, all about activism and how to make real impactful change in places other than just on Facebook. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN. You heard the woman. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us this evening. We are talking all about activism tonight. In particular, we've been talking about armchair activism and how we sometimes throw a bunch of words together like community organizing and mobilizing and activism and all these things. And that could mean anything from liking a Facebook page all the way up to, say, testifying before Congress. And so it's important that we really think about the impact of our actions. And so we've been talking with many, many founders of organizations and community activists around various topics tonight. And I'd like to welcome our next guest to the program. That is Johnny Boucher, our good friend who's been on this program before. He is the founder and the honcho of Hope for the Day, which is a really, really important organization that focuses on suicide prevention and mental health education through outreach, education, and prevention. Johnny, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. And I think you had some kind of fundraiser or benefit earlier today, so I appreciate you making the time for us on a Saturday evening.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely. It's my pleasure. Yeah, so today is actually World Suicide Prevention Day. And talk about activism. Today we released a beer in collaboration with Three Floyds Brewing, which is known for obviously having some of the craziest beers out there, Dark Lord Day. And our friends at Dark Matter Coffee, they, you know, kind of put this together with us. And then also there's a band out there called Mastodon,
yeah,
who put out a record called Crack the Sky in 2009, which is kind of the story of Braun the drummer, his sister, unfortunately, battled the life of anorexia and, you know, just really got to a dark place. And she ended up taking her life. And we wanted to come together and try to do something different. So we were like, let's throw a party. And they're like, are you busy September 10th? I'm like, that's World Suicide Prevention Day, folks. So today, the general public got to taste the Crack the Sky beer and the coffee from Dark Matter. And it was a very beautiful event at Sports Friends. And a lot of great people came out and supported it. And we had a lot of people there. And it was just really cool to be like, oh, we're drinking beer to support suicide prevention, yet we're still, you know, in this, you know, area of like this gray area of, you know, should, you know, things like alcohol companies be part of, you know, suicide prevention, mental education. I'm like, of course they should be. Like, you know, we as Americans and people, you know, we're always looking for that scapegoat to just blame whatever, you know, we're going through in life right now. And I refuse to blame something like a craft brewery for why depression is where it is. And, it, you know, ultimately could lead to suicide. I think that it's our responsibility within any entity or, you know, industry to just talk about things, because we're not out here trying to cure cancer. We're talking about our mental health, and we're humans at the end of the day, and we haven't been told how to handle this stuff. So it's just a real creative way to press the conversation and come together and be a very beautiful, you know, community that we are. And to just know that like a couple different brands can get together and throw in events and raise, you know, a couple $1,000, which 100% goes directly to our programming, which is our actions. So it's just like, we, you know, people would have, you know, went out to anyways because it's a Saturday already, but they came out and they celebrated something that was really cool. So, you know, I wish you were there. but, you know,
radio calls nonetheless, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I was like, oh, I'm just so happy that we could, you know, do this, because right now as an organization, it's just a huge activism part of, you know, taking action during National Suicide Prevention Week. And, you know, September is also Military Suicide Prevention Month, which has kind of been molded into September's just, you know, overall it's just Suicide Prevention and Awareness Month. And that's great, you know, but it needs to happen after that too. You know, that conversation needs to keep going, because we're humans, you know, we're going through life, and some days it's really cloudy out, and some days it's real sunny out. Right. But, you know, well, that's just how it is. But it's Saturday, you know, why not?
Yeah, well, and you hint at something that I'm very curious about. You know, I think so much of activism is connected to talking about difficult topics, but yours in particular has so much taboo around it. People do not want to talk about mental health. And, you know, I think people sort of will talk about suicide, but not necessarily mental health connected to that. You know, I think the mental health piece is the thing nobody wants to talk about. And I think the, you know, the campaign that you did a few months ago was really important, that it's okay not to be okay, to get people talking about that. But I still think there's so much stigma attached to that. How do you deal with that in the activism and the community organizing that you're doing for your organization around this topic?
You know, I think everything with, especially with mental health is, you know, it's all stigmas, and that comes from society, our culture standards, and then also I think a lot of it plays into our own insecurities that build up and build up and build up. But for us as an organization, I don't look at those as like the difficult things, because we can only truly be educated by something if we go to the raw details of why this happened. It's like, you know, running a study in a lab. You know, you have to put, you know, X, Y, and Z together, and if something's not, you know, panning out, we gotta think about, like, how do we change that, you know, instead of just accepting that. And where people, you know, really are held back just because mental health is, it's the scariest thing that we have to talk about, you know, because no one wants to truly be exposed. I talk a lot about, you know, social media filters. When you take a photo and you can throw this filter on it, you know, we're pillowed here in life, and we choose to go that route because it makes us more comfortable, when in reality, if we all just started shedding kind of like our skeletons out of the closet and started talking about things, we'd realize that, you know, we're all humans and we're going through this thing called life, and we haven't been trained properly on how to handle that. And within everything that we do in life, we take a little bit of piece of it with us. But if that baggage is such a negative thing, it just keeps on building up, building up, building up. And the best way to look at it is, we talk about Coca-Cola bottles, and, you know, if you keep shaking up, you don't take that cap off and release just a little of that pressure, it's just going to keep building up. And one little thing is going to cause an eruption in that bottle, and it's going to spray. And that's where suicide comes into play. And that's why we always talk about mental health and connecting it. So we give the scary details, but we say, listen, you're not alone. And if you need help, like, help is there. Like, it's present. We're not out here curing cancer. We're not here, you know, trying to, you know, do something about a disease. We're talking about things that we can easily do just by a simple conversation. So I take myself out of the equation when it comes like, oh, are we gonna press, or are we gonna say something that's gonna push someone? It's like, no, because we have an advisory board of doctors and clinicians that are like, we need to positively trigger people so we can have proactive actions. Mm. Because there's no point in talking about awareness anymore about mental health. We know life is hard. We've talked about it as a community. We know about it. And unfortunately, we only talk about it usually after crisis happens. So how do you get in front of that? Because I think that's really the activism part about what we provide as an organization. Because I'm not out here saying, oh, I'm going to start a new hotline or this new way to connect with youth. It's like, or with anyone. It's like, these services are here. The government funds really good, important things that work well. It's just, let's just be honest, like, traditional nonprofits are so dry, and they go to this model where they adhere to everything, and it's like really by the book, where with us at Hope for the Day, we refuse to do that because obviously it hasn't been working. So we don't, you know, badmouth them. We just challenge, okay, so this is what X, Y, and Z organizations have been able to do and accomplish. How can we do this in a different way that's actually going to draw people to that bridge of recovery, or that bridge to just being able to be equipped properly to talk about mental health and suicide and how you walk back from it? We got to think about it like CPR almost. If we treat our mental health like our physical health, we have been trained this entire time to know how to bounce back, you know, find resiliency when we break an arm. You know, we got to go to the doctor. Yeah, it hits us over the head. What'd you do, dummy? I had too much fun last night, and I didn't see the curb and went down and broke my arm. Okay, we know how to bounce back. It sucks. You gotta get that cast, but it's like, we know how to get back from that. And people can see that. So when you see a cast, you're like, oh, something happened. But we're not thinking the same way about our brains and how people can't see through, you know, our skin and our beautiful hair, or sometimes, you know, with the lack of hair. I'm going to be a guy one day that it might be a little bit bald, but, you know, we can't see that. We can't see that because we're not you know, able to, unless we had an X-ray or anything like that. But who carries around an X-ray machine every day with them?
Right.
And I think that's the biggest part about it is like, how do we talk about that?
Right.
Because then we can train each other to look out for the things, look out for one another. Because quite frankly, I think we can do that, a lot more these days than we're really doing.
Yeah, truly. We're talking with Johnny Boucher, who is the founder and honcho at Hope for the Day, which is a suicide prevention and mental health education organization. You mentioned something a minute ago I want to kind of circle back to, and that is how we tend, in this particular topic of activism, we tend to talk about suicide after the fact. And I think I immediately thought of Robin Williams' death. When he died, I think that was some of the most frank conversation I had ever heard or had about suicide with anybody. And that includes, I know people who have taken their own lives. And I know people who have taken their own lives. And even then, I feel like that was an interesting moment that we were in, because suddenly it was kind of the sense of like, oh my gosh, if that guy... You know, if that guy took his own life and we had no idea, there maybe all bets are off. Maybe you can't just look for outward signs and, you know, things like that. So, but nonetheless, what I saw in terms of activism from most people, we're talking average citizens, not organizations and people that are working in this area like you are, but from average citizens, what I mostly saw was a lot of, hey, listen, if you're struggling, say something, get help. You know, it was kind of this, a lot of responsibility being heaped on someone who might be in crisis and who can't necessarily seek that help. So how in this particular area, because I think your area of activism is so tricky, how do you have those conversations ahead of time?
Well, it's all about, you know, story sharing. And I think that there is, we have a campaign, you know, it only takes one. It's about empowering yourself, whether to take that next step, whether it's talking about it and being that person in your community to break the silence, or it's simply, you know, it only takes one phone call to connect you to proper help. And what we tend to do is we get a little aggressive with it. And it's because we're trying to do something outside of the ordinary, and we're trying to do it in our own way. And if we learn anything from like Eminem and Marilyn Manson and all this other stuff, like shock value kind of works, where we focus on bringing in someone that, like, kind of that shock, because that's the education part, and we have to bring it to the, you know, to the forefront. So that's why we as an organization go to schools for free, because I'm not going to charge a school to talk about our feelings. Like, we need to get out there, we need to do this, because then that, you know, leads to saving more lives. We just wrapped up our first really, really big partnership with the U.S. military. And I was at active duty bases in the U.K. and in Europe, you know, Germany, Belgium, Kosovo, which mind-blowing experience. But with all of this, you know, I have this opportunity to, you know, whether it's being on stage at a concert or being at, you know, a theater hall on a base in Germany in front of 300 people, you know, like, I have this opportunity to say the things that we don't say. And whether you think about it right then and there and it hits you, it resonates in a way that, you know, is proactive, or, you know, down the road, all of a sudden you remember this chubby dude from Chicago that got up and said that, hey, if you're struggling, it's okay not to be okay. That resonates with people. And the way that we do it as an organization is by going through the things that make us happy, the things that make us tick and tock. That's why, you know, we utilize self-expression platforms. So that can be really anything, however we choose to express ourselves. So it's like health and wellness, to music, to arts, to, you know, cooking, to simple things like gardening. Like, you know, whoever thought about like trying to talk about your mental health, you know, through a gardening magazine, like, we'll be the first organization to do it, just because we think differently. And I think that is a huge part of activism in any, you know, sense. It's like, how do we think differently? Because something hasn't been working this entire time, and it's no one's fault. But if we're going to see a change, if we're going to create a revolution, it starts by just thinking differently and pondering and not going the traditional route. I remember the early days of Hope for the Day. Everyone's like, so what are your local services like? I'm like, oh, I'm thinking big picture. And I had a couple of mentors that were like, we think it's very admirable. And the fact that, you know, our 100% donation model is just very, you know, ambitious. And it's like, wow, can we do this? Can we allow people to once again think about charity in a positive way and know that they're not going to pour an ice bucket over their head and help raise $220 million and realize that 26% of that money actually goes to the work of the organization. I want people to understand, like, hey, if you want, you can lock in that gift of $10, as much money as anyone is willing to give. We can lock that in and just say, hey, with your money, we went and did this. And we press the conversation. And that's where I think we're a little bit different with organizations that, expect people to kind of come to them. We go to the people, we break the silence, but we're also buffers there because we're tattooed. We're these cool looking people, I guess. And people resonate with that. You know, we're not in some suits. We have licensed professional counselors that come out with us every day on the band's Warped Tour, and they're all from the local area. And I always say in the emails, like, with all due respect, do not show up like you're going to your office. Show up like you're going to a concert, because this is an easy access point. This is a safe haven. This is a community where people come. And that's, why we focus on the self-expression platforms, because your job by me, you're 9 to 5, you get through, you got to get whatever it is. But, like, what do you do afterwards? Do you go shoot hoops? Do you want to be something different? Like, how do you have goals? Like, how do you work on those if you're working for someone else all the time? And it's important that we have those little things. I'm a huge morning person. I love waking up super early, and I don't look at my email. And then when I do, my day is over.
But it's
just so important, because we all have these mindsets, like, especially when you're very goal oriented, and something like this organization. Like, I can tell you what we're doing through 2018 in the fall right now. But there's so many other things that are going to fall into place that I didn't think about right now, because I'm looking at the big, the big scale, but it's like, we are always operating. And I think that with the advancements of technology, like, we don't have those boundaries anymore where we feel obligated to email, someone in a response practically immediately. Like, they called us like they're our mother, So it's like, we need to take that little bit of time and really nurture that and realize that if we're going to be active and we're going to be, goal oriented, you have to set that up for yourself, and you have to be determined. And it's the same thing in life where, I look at experiences, never, like, even if something is a horrible failure in some other people's eyes, I'm like, all right, what do we learn from that? And that is what I learned from the amount of people that I had close to me that took their lives. I was like, you know what? I understand this, especially when my aunt took her life. It was the hardest thing, because she was my godmother, and my mom's family literally puts the fun in dysfunction, and their family tree is very interesting. But with anything, when you lose someone as horrible as maybe times may have been, you feel so bad. That, especially my aunt, she was in a very dark place, and my parents, they didn't expect me to call them that morning and be like, hey, I just got off the phone with my cousin, and mom, your sister took her life. And, we're all sitting there like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe this happened. And I'm like, yeah, but see, this keeps happening because of certain things like stigma and just the inability to open up and be honest when we're struggling the most. But when I started, the organization, I had 10 people on that list already. And the biggest one was my boss, Mike Scanlon, at the time, because he was in the music industry. He was the Robin Williams. His nickname was the mayor of Old Town. Mm-hmm. And, you got to be someone to get that title in Chicago. But the thing is that it doesn't matter what we put on the outside. That's what people can see. And that's what we're just, constantly filling a void and buffering with anything in our life. And that's the scariest thing, because we can't see what's going on. So when I sat down, I was like, man, this sucks. And it's just like cancer and HIV, when people were sick and tired of being told that they just lost, a family member unexpectedly to cancer. They're like, well, why don't we have the funding to research? That's why people champion behind that. And we have to take that same anger and pain that, is in our hearts, whether we have lost someone from cancer or not. Losing people sucks. Yeah. But when it comes to suicide, it's like, oh, well, we could, I wish I would have done something different. It's like, we need to go back to being able to communicate with one another. We can't rely on technology to speak for us and get it out there and be able to speak for us when we're really struggling. We need to understand that establishing conversation is so easy, but it all starts with just opening our mouths and being honest. And it's terrifying. It truly is terrifying. But, like, for us, I'm like, I would rather say the awkward things and break the silence and just have that be there. On Warped Tour, like, the Vans Warped Tour is amazing. We get access to 500,000 youth here in America. And when suicide is the second leading cause of death of 15 to 24-year-olds in the World Health Organization, it's like, yeah, we may need to think this differently. Like, it's probably going to be 10 to 24 soon because so many kids younger and younger are taking their lives.
Will you say that number again?
Yeah, right now it's 15 to 24. It's the second leading cause of death of, worldwide. And that's terrifying. Like, our youth and are definitely struggling, but World Health Organization wants to take that number down to 10 because they're like 10 to 24-year-olds are really what, we're seeing more and more suicides every single day. And it's terrifying because they don't know how to really stop it. It's because we haven't been taught to, right. That goes back to the whole, physical health and mental health thing. But we've also equipped people to be so sensitive to things through technology. And that's the real scary thing because, social media is fantastic. Like, getting the word out is amazing. And being able to give people insight to your life it's a very cool thing. Yeah, but, like, it's taken away so much from us. That's why I focus when I'm in schools. I'm like, who's got Instagram? Who took the photo this morning? Who added, like, the unicorn with the stars in the back, to make it, like, look great? But, what if you just put, like, that? I love the, hashtag no filter. I'm like, yeah, like, but I want even more rawness. Like, why'd you post this exact thing? I wish people get more in depth instead of trying to use it as like a way of communication. Like, oh, look at my life,
Right, which is an interesting. Sorry to cut you off there, but it's an interesting thing right now. Is like Alicia Keys is really pushing to not wear makeup and things like that. People are like, I just want to be me. I just want to do this. I don't need, I don't want to be behind this wall of pretense. So I think that's
right.
A really interesting point. So as we are running down the clock, I'm afraid we do have to go to break now. But where can people find out more about your organization and possibly support it and get involved?
Well, the best thing about technology in the internet is that you can Google Hope for the Day, or you can simply just go to hftd.org, and you can find us on all of those, social media channels. But all the content that we put out is just to kind of, break the ice and be that reminder. So if it's the morning that you wake up and you go through your Instagram feed and you see something that, is from the organization that lifts you up, it's like we put it out there because we know, people are waking up and they're struggling, but every day is a new day, and take advantage of it, and don't live in doubt and fear. Just push yourself and realize that there's so much more out there, and you deserve that. You deserve the life that you desire.
Lovely words to live by, indeed. Thank you so much, Johnny Boucher, who is the founder and the honcho of Hope for the Day. I'm going to tweet a link out after the program so everybody can get in touch and get involved with this really important organization. Thanks for being with us tonight, Johnny.
Thank you. Have a great rest of your Saturday.
All right, you too. Bye-bye. All right, my friends, we're going to take a little break and get you news and all that good stuff back in just a bit for the rest of the Saturday Night Special here on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. I'm grateful to you for sharing part of your Saturday with me. I know you have many, many things that you could be doing, so I appreciate the time, my friends. Tonight, I have been talking with many, many founders and community organizers all about activism. And as I said at the start of the show, activism is one thing, but it is kind of a continuum, right? And sort of this spectrum of things. And we've started to get a lot into one direction, one end of that spectrum, where we think we've just changed the world by hitting like on a Facebook page, or we've, shared a post, and those things matter, but sometimes that's all we do. And so I've been talking with all these community organizers and people, just brilliant, passionate people doing all this really important work in this area, because I think it's really important that we have this conversation and that we challenge ourselves to really think about what does it mean when I want to make a difference, when I'm mad as hell about an issue and I want to make a difference, I want to make a change for the better. What do I really want? What is the outcome I want? What am I really doing to support it? Because sometimes we get into that slacktivism mode. So joining us now is Tanya Unsueta, who is a community organizer and with Organized Communities Against Deportation. She has founded the Immigrant Youth Justice League and is the co-founder of Coming Out of the Shadows Strategy. So a lot of experience in this area. Tanya, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us tonight. I know it's a Saturday and there's lots of things you could be doing, so I appreciate you coming to us to talk about your work. So tell us a little bit about your organization, Organized Communities Against Deportation, to begin.
Sure. Sure. We started as a group of undocumented young people back in 2010 as a group called the Immigrant Youth Justice League, and we started because we were really fighting the deportation of one of our friends, students from here from Chicago, and also co-founder of the Immigrant Youth Justice League. And so we realized that there were no organizations representing us and our community, and so that's kind of how we started. And now what we do is organize, particularly with members who are undocumented and who are facing deportation, to try to keep our families together.
And then also the work that you do, you wear a lot of hats, Tanya. I'm getting that reading about you online. You wear a lot of hats, and I think your passion really shows through for what you're doing, because you're wearing a lot of hats all generally in the same area. But tell us a bit, your work as policy and legal director of Migente. Tell us about that, too.
Yeah, Migente is a new organization, national, that we're trying to create as a space for Latinos to be able to organize both online and offline. And so we come out of the Not One More Deportation campaign, and with this idea that we actually need to be doing both online and offline organizing, particularly in the Latino community.
So in this particular area, I mean, I think it's very interesting to talk about both the actions we're doing online and offline. I think it's, you know, as I said, it's so easy to get caught up in, oh, well, I liked their Facebook page, so I'm an activist. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of go there. But with your topic in particular, I think what's so interesting about it is there's a degree of not taboo, that's not the word, but like a degree of kind of risk attached to it, right? That I think there's conversation that sometimes people don't want to have. And so how do you address that when you're organizing in online spaces around a topic that I think some people are maybe afraid to talk about or hesitant anyway?
I mean, for us, it's been one of the most useful spaces to organize. And I mean, when we started talking about being undocumented back in 2010, I feel like Twitter was a place, for example, where we sometimes met people before we like knew their names, we knew their like Twitter handles. And it was because things are so scary in the real world, like the online space provided a space for people to participate in the conversation and to like talk about their experiences in a way that sometimes being didn't allow them to. And then for us to be able to connect really across the country, right? Like here is a population that by definition is restricted in our movement, right? Sometimes because of like local police targeting, sometimes because you literally don't have a driver's license to go somewhere far away, but we were able to connect online. And so I think, you know, it's both difficult because not only is it taboo, but it's also illegal in some cases. Right. Like we are undocumented, which is against certain laws, which we are trying to change. But so I actually think online has provided for us the world of the internet, like a different space to be able to organize in. And I think the challenge is transferring that to the community and like off the internet.
Right, which seems kind of the opposite problem for a lot of other people working in the activist space, because a lot of times it starts offline and getting the online conversation where we're all kind of siloed off and there's just kind of an echo chamber around us of people that already agree with us. You know, I think everybody kind of finds their own people online and stays with them, but mm-hmm. like people that agree with them already. So it seems kind of an opposite situation in your case. And so how do you transfer that, you know, to offline organizing?
I mean, I think the way that I see it is that whether you're doing organizing online, whether it's through Twitter, Facebook, or whatever, any social media or other medium, it's about the strategy and it's about getting people to take organized action. And so, you know, I also think that sometimes people offline do a very superficial level of organizing, right? Like actually like putting a banner out your window that says stop the war, or like going to that one protest every whatever October actually like doesn't do everything if it's not strategic, if it's not planned, if it's not targeted and organized. And so I think the way to, you know, we've been able to put pressure on our targets, which range from like local elected officials to immigration and customs enforcement, by directing people through online petitions to make phone calls, to write letters, at the same time as we're protest the ground. So I think it's about like seeing the online world as one more strategy that, like, just like organizing needs to be like strategic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really interesting point, right? That we've seen social media at this point give rise to social movements. I mean, around the world, we've seen that. We've seen large monolith corporations have to completely change and redirect their plans and strategies because of public outcry. And I think we shouldn't undermine the power of social media by any means. So when you think of just the average citizen that you know, it feels connection to your cause, you know, what is the single most important action that you think, someone who maybe isn't calling themselves an activist but just wants to be supportive, what is the most important thing to do? I think people just go, well, I'm going to retweet this organization, or I'm going to share their Facebook posts. But is it, you know, you mentioned putting pressure on elected officials and systems of power. Is it that, or is it something else?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is actually like looking at what organizations like ours is doing. So for example, if the folks are in Chicago, I would ask them to look at what Organized Communities Against Deportation is asking people to take action on. So for example, for me, that moment when we put up a petition, for example, online, people to make a phone call so that the local field director of our immigration office, Richard Wong, can see that there's community support to stop the deportation of a particular member. And so the moment when that person picks up the phone from seeing that petition online is that link, I think, between like retweeting and like not really existing in a real space to actually, I don't know, somehow like harnessing your influence, your power, your people power to like direct it to that person. And so I think like, you know, this is actually a tactic that people use nationwide of like using petitions to put pressure on our targets. And I would just urge people to look at those, find them. And if there's a phone call action, ask, like I would urge them to make that call.
Yeah, I think those actions, I think people are so reluctant to do, but they're so very, very important. It's so important for your elected officials to hear from you. I think that matters so much more than we realize. And I think sometimes people go, oh, I don't have time to write a letter, I don't have time to make a call, but that matters so much. And I, you know, a little bit earlier in the program, Tanya, I was talking about this idea around boycotts and petitions, because sometimes I think people start them, they get mad about something that's happened or an issue they feel is an injustice, and they'll start a petition or a boycott without really like a strategy or an ask attached to it. You know, they'll just say, you know, boycott this thing, but not boycott this until they amend their ways or something like that. You know, and I think that's so important. That's a great reminder.
Yeah. And making sure that your target actually knows what you're doing, because I think the other thing that people often forget is they'll start a petition and this petition exists somewhere, but the person who you're trying to communicate with actually doesn't even know that you started that petition, right? Oh. So I think that's the other thing I would urge people to do.
That's an important step. Make sure the person you're writing a petition about knows that there is a petition. Very, very important. So where can people go to find out more about the organizations that you're with and support them and the work that you're doing?
Yeah, so you can visit organizedcommunities.org for the work here in Chicago, and Mijente, MIJENTE.net is the Latinx